With pregnancy come many physical changes. Many are obvious to the naked eye, such as your growing belly or skin changes. But what about internal changes in pregnancy? I'm Karen Ruby Brown, certified nurse midwife, and today we're discussing cervical changes during pregnancy. This is Preggy Pals.
Is that a plus sign?
Pink or blue?
Hospital or home birth?
What type of food should I be eating?
I think I just peed myself.
I'm pregnant. And I have to exercise?
What pregnancy glow?
Wait, was that a contraction?
Gotta make these pants fit! I've got kinkles!
What do you mean there's more than one?
You've got the symptoms, and now you've got the support you need for a happy 9 months. This is Preggy Pals, your pregnancy your way.
Welcome to Preggy Pals, broadcasting from the Birth Education Center of San Diego. Preggy Pals is your online, on-the-go support group for expecting parents and those hoping to become pregnant. I'm your host, Stephanie Glover. Thanks to all of our loyal listeners who have joined the Preggy Pals Club. Our members get special episodes, bonus content after each new show, plus special giveaways and discounts. See our website for more information. Another way you can stay connected is by downloading our free Preggy Pals app, available in the Android, iTunes, and Windows marketplaces. Sunny, our producer, is now going to give us some information about our virtual panelist program.
Hello, everyone. So if you're listening to today's show and you're not joining us here in the studio, you can still participate. We would love to hear your questions for our expert. We would love for you just to kind of join the conversation and share your personal experience. So there's a couple different ways you can do that. You can like our Facebook page at Preggy Pals. You can also follow us on Twitter, which is Preggy then underscore Pals. And we're going to be kind of tweeting out some information and posting some stuff, some photos to Facebook as we go along through today's conversation. And feel free to write us back, to comment on some of the things that we'll be discussing. You can even make it into the show. We can read some of your comments in the show. If you are using Twitter, use hashtag PreggyPalsVP. That VP stands for Virtual Panelist. And if you want some more information about our Virtual Panelist program, you can visit our website at newmommymedia.com.
Thank you, Sunny.
Yes.
So let's go around the table here, and I'm going to have the panelists introduce themselves. We have two Kristens in the room today, so I'm going to start with Kristen 1.
All right. Thank you. My name is Kristen Pavon. I am 33 years old. My current job title is full-time stay-at-home mom. Definitely the hardest job I've ever had. And I am not currently pregnant. I have two children. My daughter Zoe just turned 3 last week, and my son Brady is 10 and a half months old. And I had 2 vaginal births with both children, 2 inductions and 2 vaginal births.
All right. My name is Michelle Ashley. I am 34. I am in the insurance industry. I am due on December 31st with my second son. They will be 20 months apart. So I have a toddler at home and delivered in a hospital vaginal birth.
Hello, my name is Kristen Stratton. I am a birth and postpartum doula, and I'm also in the marketing industry. I'm the mother of 3 really super adorable children. I have a 4-year-old daughter and a 2.5-year-old son and a 15-month-old son. And I had cesarean births, but I also went for a VBAC after 2 cesareans. So,
great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, so before we get started today, we're just going to be discussing an article that was just that we just found online, and it discusses the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, which are referred to as ACOG, coming out regarding ultrasounds as means of dating the gestational age of the fetus. And essentially, the article is saying that if a pregnant woman has received an early pregnancy ultrasound for dating purposes, if she receives an ultrasound later in pregnancy, it really shouldn't be used to change her due date. So they're saying that if you've received an early one, ultrasounds kind of beyond 14 weeks aren't necessarily accurate or appropriate for changing the due date. And I know that Karen, being a midwife, can maybe speak to this a little bit.
Sure. The earlier the ultrasound, the more accurate in terms of dating. So a first trimester ultrasound is always going to be more accurate than a second or third trimester ultrasound. In fact, in the third trimester, it can be off by a couple of weeks. And in the first trimester, you're within a few days.
Okay.
So it's just better practice and commonsensical to use those early ultrasounds.
Okay. And did any of the panelists experience a later pregnancy ultrasound and maybe your care provider suggesting a different due date for you by chance, or did anyone?
We just, with number two, we went in a little bit later than normal, so I thought I was 10 weeks and ended up being past the 11-week mark.
Oh, okay.
So I was talking to Karen earlier because, you know, having a December baby right on the cusp of the new year, I'm still a little anxious about if he's going to be 2014 or 2015. So
oh, that's true.
It made, actually, I feel a little bit more confident that definitely we're looking more at a December baby here, hopefully.
I hear about this a lot, especially in the online community where anxious moms are always posting about their doctors doing a late trimester ultrasound and the concern being that baby's too big now and therefore are going to either schedule an induction or a recommended cesarean. So I really think that this is a really good thing that ACOG has come out with. And also it's kind of on the heels of their prevention of the primary cesarean section paper. So I think hand in hand with that, it's not only gonna be good advice for moms to have accurate dating and more accurate expectations of when baby's gonna arrive, but it's also gonna give moms more time to have pregnancy and have and gestate their baby without the pressures of either having an unnecessary C-section or unnecessary induction. So,
and we know too that those sizing sonograms at the end have such a, you know, scale in terms of accuracy.
Absolutely.
To begin with. They can be several pounds off.
Yep.
So, okay, great. Well, thank you for your input.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Today, we are learning all about cervical changes in pregnancy. Joining us as our expert panelist is Karen Ruby Brown, a certified nurse midwife with extensive experience in a variety of birth settings, including hospital, birth center, and home. She received her midwifery training and Master of Science in Nursing at Yale University in 2002, has been with UCSD Midwifery Service since 2003, and most recently opened a solo practice called Airy Midwifery, offering home and birth center deliveries. Welcome to the show, Karen. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much. Good to be here.
Great. So let's start by quickly explaining what the cervix is.
The cervix is actually part of the uterus. It's the part that we can feel with fingers and see with eyes. It's the lower part that opens up and allows the baby to come out. It also allows menstrual blood to come out and allows sperm and semen and other things to go in. And so
great. And can you describe a pre-pregnancy cervix?
Pre-pregnancy, the cervix is pretty firm. It's pretty firm tissue, and it's generally closed. It can be a little bit open depending on when what time of your menstrual cycle.
Okay.
It is. So it can be softer, it can be a little open, it can be firm, but generally speaking, it's essentially closed and essentially pretty firm. It also can be in different places in the vaginal vault, so sometimes you have to go looking for it.
Okay. And in the beginning of pregnancy, what changes occur to the cervix?
In the beginning of pregnancy, it gets full of blood. So the vascularity increases by just, I don't know, the number, but a ton. So it gets blue and swollen and softer.
And what causes that?
The increased vascularity. So the uterus as an organ is saying, okay, we're about to grow a person here, let's get some blood going.
And so the increased vascularity is caused by hormone, like the hormonal shift?
It's then, caused by mechanical and hormonal shifts.
Great. And then what is the mucus plug and when does it form?
The vagina is a mucous membrane.
Okay.
Right? Just like your mouth and your nose. And So mucus is always being produced by the cervix, and sometimes it's noticeable and sometimes it's not. During ovulation, you'll see mucus called spinbarkite, and that is, it's kind of paving the way for the sperm to be able to travel easily up that passageway. And then in pregnancy, the mucus that's formed by the cervix gets kind of hard and forms like a cork, right? And so it's kind of sealing off the entry and exit way, because you want what's in there to stay in and you want what's out to stay out.
Gotcha. Do women lose the mucus plug throughout pregnancy, or is that generally during labor, or can it depend?
Women can have increased mucus during pregnancy, especially towards the end of pregnancy. There can be a lot of excess mucus, and it can be coming from, there can be discharge, extra discharge coming from the vagina. It can be mucus coming from the cervix. But as you get closer to term and closer to birthing your baby, the cervix, which has had the job description of keeping what's in and what's out, now kind of has a change in MO. And so part of the process of preparing for that change in job description is to let that mucus cork go. So it releases it, and it can release it in one big handful, or it can release it in dribs and drabs. So some women don't even notice their mucus plug coming out, and some women are just astounded at what is in their hand when they just simply go and pee. So it can really run the gamut. And then through labor and birth, there's more mucus. So the mucus keeps getting produced. It's not like a all or nothing thing. It's not like the mucus plug is gone now, so there's no more mucus plug.
Okay.
It keeps producing. It regenerates. Yeah.
Now, for the panelists, did you guys experience losing your mucus plug, or what did that kind of mean for you?
This is Kristen Stratton. In my first pregnancy, I had my membrane swept, which is a whole different subject, so we won't even go there. But I did notice the loss of my mucus plug shortly thereafter, and it was kind of like an egg yolk consistency, and it happened over the course of about 24 hours. So I was noticing a significant difference, and it definitely caught my attention, but unfortunately, labor did not begin for another 6 days. So
that was going to be
buyer beware. Buyer beware. That does not mean that labor is imminent.
Gotcha.
It means you're headed in the right direction, but it doesn't mean that you should put your suitcases in your car.
Absolutely.
Right. This is Kristen Pavon. With each pregnancy, I didn't actually. There was nothing noticeable, no event. You know, I went in for my induction, and then at the end, I had a baby. But there's no mucus event that I was aware of.
Yeah.
How about you, Michelle?
Yeah, that's probably more my experience. Is maybe a little bit more discharge, but nothing that I would have definitively said, yep, that's what that is. So.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think I lost some of mine with my first around 35 or 36 weeks. And then with my second, I think it was maybe a week before I delivered, but it was just different. It wasn't as, you know, like gelatinous. It was just kind of in passing and didn't think too much of it. So it's really interesting to see the broad range and how
I like the term the mucus event.
I borrow that term. Yeah.
So what does it mean when the cervix is dilated?
The cervix dilates to let the baby out, and it just means that the bottom of the uterus, the exit door, is opening and essentially becoming a single passage with the vagina. So it becomes one large room.
Okay. So for baby to fit.
For baby to fit. And, you know, the cervix can start softening and dilating well before labor starts, especially with second or third or 10th time moms, right? When your body's done it before, the cervix can be a little bit softer and can be open even as early as 35, 36 weeks. And it doesn't mean you're going to labor. It just means that you're a little bit open. So there are women, multiparous women, who can be 3-4 centimeters for weeks on end.
Okay. And it doesn't even necessarily mean that, labor's happening within.
It can be quite frustrating for those moms, right? Because we think of dilation as an indication of where our body is in labor. But if you're not in labor and you're 4 centimeters, it can be frustrating. At that point, there won't be a mucus plug because the cervix is just too soft and open. So those moms might not notice the mucus plug at all.
So then when we're speaking about labor progress and we hear so much about dilation, I almost feel like that's the most prevalent in terms of gauging what's going on with the cervix. But there are also a lot of other changes that are prepping your cervix for labor. So one of the terms is ripening. So what is cervical ripening? What does that
mean? I love all the fruit metaphors. The fruit, are they metaphors or analogies? You know, the size of the uterus is a lemon and then an orange and then a grapefruit.
Right.
Ripening just means it's getting soft. So it is like fruit. When you have a hard nectarine, it's hard to eat, right? And it's firm, it's hard, it's not indentable. When you have a ripe nectarine, it's indentable and you know it's ready to eat. And same with the cervix. It's just it when it's hard, it's not ready to open. And when it's soft, that's an indication that body's moving towards having the baby. It has to soften, which is ripening. It has to efface, which is shortening. And it has to dilate, which is opening. And all of those things need to happen. Yes. First-time moms, it happens usually sequentially, right? It'll get softer, and then it'll get shorter, and then it'll get more open. And with second, third, tenth-time moms, it's kind of a big free-for-all. It just all right. happens at once.
Surprise!
A lot of the time, yep.
And I've heard something about, is it like feeling the tip of your nose versus your lip, or was it something like that?
Yeah,
in terms of what the cervix feels like?
Yeah, do you guys know that? So an unripe cervix is like your nose, a ripe cervix is like your lips, and a really ripe cervix is like the inside of your mouth. And when I was learning to do cervical exams, I was told to feel for the shaving cream in the whipped cream. Like, that's the kind of textural difference you're looking for. That's how soft a cervix can be. It can be really hard to, when you're first learning, to identify a ripe, ready-to-go cervix. Very subtle texture changes.
Great. Well, when we come back, we'll discuss cervical changes in relation to labor. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Today we're discussing cervical changes in pregnancy and labor. Karen Ruby Brown, certified nurse midwife, is our expert. What is posterior cervix versus an anterior cervix?
If you imagine the uterus is just kind of hanging out in, okay, let's try this. Imagine a balloon in a paper bag, right? And the paper bag has some air in it, so it's rectangle, it's not a squished paper bag. And then the balloon is kind of hanging out in there. The balloon can kind of flop towards the back or flop towards the front or go straight up and down, depending on kind of how big it is, how much air is in it. And if you imagine the little air hole of the balloon, depending on how that balloon is facing in the paper bag, imagine that little where you blow the air into it is the cervix. That can be towards the front of the paper bag or towards the back of the paper bag or towards one of the sides.
Okay.
Does that work for people? Yeah. I just completely made that up as we were doing this. So what that means is that, so keeping that image in mind, when a clinician goes in to do a cervical check, they might have to reach really far back to feel the cervix, or the cervix might be under the pubic bone, so really far in front. It can be off to one of the sides, or it can be right in the middle. And what happens in labor is that as the cervix is dilating, as the muscles of the uterus are pulling up on the lower uterine segment and pulling that cervix open, and as the head is pressing against the cervix, it's all going to kind of line up, so it's in line with the vagina. So we talk about posterior cervixes as not quite in labor cervixes. And we talk about anterior cervixes as, I should say cervices is probably the more correct term, as kind of ready to let the baby come out because it's forming one big room, right? The vagina and the uterus, it's all that sliding door, right? If you think of the cervix as the sliding door, it's gone.
Okay. And are there ways other than, you mentioned the internal exam using your hands or your fingers to determine the state of the cervix, are there other ways to be able to, notice the cervical changes? Can you tell in an ultrasound? Are there other physical symptoms that would lead you to believe that the cervix is changing?
Yeah, ultrasound is used for preterm labor checks. So if someone is having some signs of preterm labor, an ultrasound might be done to look at the length of the cervix because it's nice and long. Earlier in the pregnancy, it can be up to 5 or even more centimeters long. And then as you're getting closer to labor, it gets to about 2.5 centimeters long and then shorter and shorter and shorter until it's not long at all. So there are ways to tell what the cervix is doing. So talking specifically about labor progress, behavioral cues can can help to identify what part of labor someone is in.
And I've also heard, and as a doula, I'm sure you can speak to this, about the purple line.
Yes.
Can you explain that to
us? The purple line of dilation.
Yes.
When women are laboring, they're generally unclothed, right? Women don't like clothes on during labor. And so we have great opportunity to observe the area of the tailbone and the rectum and the perineum. And what happens, and you can notice it more in fairer-skinned women, there is a line that you can see extending from the rectum up around the tailbone and the coccyx. And the longer that line is, the greater the dilation.
And how does that line form? Is it from pressure of the baby, or?
I mean, my guess is that it's simple as the baby's head is so low that it's pushing on that curve of the tailbone and the sacrum and the coccyx, and that's putting pressure on that skin, because we basically have a seam that runs through the center of our bodies all the way around. Right, the linea nigra forms along that seam. And some people, you can really see that seam. You can see it on the perineum. So I think it's that tissue just getting stretched. And the lower the baby and the fewer layers of tissue in between the baby's head and the outside skin, the more you're going to just see outside visual changes.
So interesting.
I've never used it to actually quote unquote diagnose dilation, right? Or stage of labor, but it is a really interesting thing. And there's this very interesting thing that I have tried in labor where there's a texture change in the lower abdomen that you can actually feel the juncture of the lower uterine segment and the fundus, the body of the uterus, and if you can kind of get in tune with your fingers, the number of centimeters up from the pubic bone supposedly correlates with dilation. But I haven't done a scientific experiment. It's just one of those cool
though.
Little things that we can play with in labor.
Well, and it's so common. I mean, I know that there's a bit of controversy even with a lot of cervical checks during labor. So what are the reasons that you might want to have fewer cervical checks?
Risk of infection. So risk of infection, especially if the water bag is broken, you don't have that protective layer surrounding the baby and protecting the baby. So the more checks you do, the more bacteria, even with sterile gloves, you're dragging bacteria in, the more bacteria you're dragging in, and you can increase that risk. The other thing is, who likes cervical checks? They're not something that, you know, women do ask for them because they want to know where they are. They need to wrap their mind around where they are, but they're not generally very enjoyable for women in labor.
You're
They're
so
uncomfortable.
Sensitive too, and you feel everything.
Yeah. And even just having to lie still, having to lie on your back. So those are just basic reasons.
And I would say too, even like you said, I think sometimes women, if we want to control a situation, and so we want to kind of know what are those markers, where am I in this process? But then if you've heard, well, you're still at a certain dilation, that can be really disheartening. And so did anyone here have experience with feeling like they were maybe stalled, you know, if you've heard that term before?
I definitely was. I mean, with both inductions, when I went in, I was about 3 centimeters dilated and did an entire round of Pitocin, was on the max dose and hadn't changed at all and wasn't feeling any pain. My water had not broken yet at that point. So it was frustrating because they did check me periodically. It was about over the course of about 12 hours. And, you know, you're in a bed hooked up to everything. And, you know, they kept saying nothing's changing. And then my doctor came in and broke my water. And then at that point, things progressed pretty quickly. But yeah, it was about 12 hours with each child, actually.
Yeah, and that's, and you know, yeah,
that's 12 hours
get in your head, like, well, what's next? Or, you know, why isn't this working? Or how about either of you ladies?
Well, in my own experience as a laboring mom, having been at 1 centimeter for 21 hours, I definitely know that frustration. As a doula, when my clients choose to have a vaginal exam, it can sometimes be very reassuring and joyful to know that progress is being made, but it can also be twofold. It can be disheartening. It can be frustrating. But sometimes it does give us good information. Sometimes it gives us information that maybe baby's not engaged in cervix, or maybe mom's having some fear or some sort of emotional response that is not allowing her to relax and just let her body do what it needs to do. So it's also a very important thing for us to realize that there is a mind-body connection to the cervix, and I'm sure Karim can speak to that as a midwife as well. So that's something to consider as well, because when we go in for exams during prenatal appointments and we consent to vaginal exams, sometimes we get set ourselves up for a failure because our body's not working. We're not dilated. We're not doing that. And so-and-so was dilated at 37 weeks at 3 centimeters, and I'm still high and tight. And, you know, and it doesn't mean that your body's not doing what it's meant to do. It's just, it's different. So I think women should be really kind to themselves when it comes to dilation, because their bodies were made to have babies. And
I think it's the greatest exercise in patience.
It is. It is.
And faith.
And so is parenting, for that matter.
Just setting you up for the next
18, 30
forever
years.
Yeah. And then I know we had a separate episode on cervical scar tissue, and I know that that can actually prevent some dilation at certain points in pregnancy. Karen, can you speak to that at all? Or what are some ways to work around cervical scar tissue briefly?
Yeah. So if someone's had a LEAP procedure, which is surgical removal of part of the cervix for abnormal cells, there can be some scar tissue formed. And it's like, imagine a purse string with a fishing line through it. It can just be really, really hard fibrous stuff. And it just won't open no matter how much you're contracting. And so sometimes you just need a clinician to go in there and just massage it out. Just get rid of it. And so that's sometimes it's discovered in labor. Oh, there's scar tissue. Have you had a procedure? Yes. I mean, ideally we know this beforehand, but sometimes we don't. Right. Oh, sometimes yes, I had a this.
Right.
Just massage it out. Okay. It's not comfortable, but it can lead to labor, which is what we want, right?
What we're there for.
That's right.
Well, thank you, Karen, for joining us today. For more information about Karen Ruby Brown, as well as information on any of our panelists, visit the episode page on our website. This conversation continues for members of the Preggy Pals Club. After the show, Karen's going to be discussing what an incompetent cervix is. To join our club, visit our website, newmommymedia.com.
Hey, Preggy Pals, before we wrap up today's show, we have an important message to pass along, and it's a message about giving. Here in the U.S., most of us are blessed to have many amenities at our disposal, including basics such as water and sanitation services, but there are countries around the world who aren't as fortunate. Joining us today on the phone is Serena Prabasi. She's the CEO of WaterAid America. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So not having safe water is a crisis situation in many countries. And we have heard this before. We do hear about other countries where they don't have enough water or various resources. But what I really like about your organization is it seems to focus more on mothers and their children and families in general. So can you tell us a little bit more about that problem and how it impacts families in other countries?
Sure. Lack of water sanitation affects everybody, but women and children really pay a much higher price for carry the burden of not having this. Women are responsible in most countries for collecting water, often in very dangerous conditions, walking long distances, miles upon miles on a daily basis, just to collect enough water that their families use in a day. So it's a daily struggle and drudgery and takes a lot of time. Kids as well. Kids suffer disproportionately from water-related diseases, and the numbers are really horrifying. 500,000 children die every year from diarrhea that is completely preventable and is caused by unsafe water and poor sanitation. Particularly also for girls, school children as well as girls. Just like women are responsible for collecting water in many countries, often that starts quite young when they're girls. And in schools as well, schools that don't have water and safe toilets and the basics, you know, you can't expect children to stay in school and really be learning when they're sick from the unsafe water, or when they are in school and they're thirsty, they don't have water to drink. So it really touches upon the lives of infants, children, women, mothers particularly.
Tell us a little bit more about WaterAid America and what you guys are doing to help with this situation.
Sure. WaterAid focuses on providing safe water, sanitation, including safe toilets, which is something that a lot of people don't think about, but is a very basic human need, and hygiene practices. Something as basic as hand washing with soap can really save lives. And WaterAid does this in an integrated way, combining water, sanitation, and hygiene for the best impact on people's lives and the best outcomes. So girls can stay in school, that women can free up hours of time that they could start a business or do farming or do something else rather than spending hours and hours collecting water. So we work with local governments, we work with communities, we work with private sector and businesses to make a change that is much bigger than our organization. At the same time, our direct work has reached millions of people. And water and sanitation, investing in water and sanitation is one of the best investments people can make because you get a huge return. So for investing in something as basic as water and sanitation, you get a return in the benefits of education, the benefits of health, the benefits of economic benefits of people starting small businesses. So the benefits are really, really multiple. There are studies and there's evidence that shows that every dollar you invest in water and sanitation has returns, economic returns, many times. So for sanitation, it's something like $7 for return for every dollar you invest. So these are very good investments to make.
Absolutely.
If you think about giving as an investment.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you mentioned giving. So today is Giving Tuesday. And for those of you who don't know what Giving Tuesday is, it's a time during the holiday season that's dedicated to giving back. And today, you guys are actually matching donations today?
We're very lucky. We have some special donors who are matching up to $150,000. So every dollar that we receive today on Giving Tuesday is doubled.
That is awesome. So how can we help out the other 364 days of the year? If people are listening to this and it's not Giving Tuesday and they still want to help, how can they do that?
Well, the first thing to do is to visit our website, wateraid.org. There are a lot of resources, information. There's a very easy donate link. We always like that. it's the donations that really keep us going, but that allow us to support communities all over the world. But there are also other ways to get involved. You can volunteer, you can help us spread the message about water and sanitation. And really the website is the first place to start, wateraid.org.
All right. Well, Serena, thanks so much for being with us today and for helping to make our world a better place. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
That wraps up our show for today. We appreciate you listening to Preggy Pals. Don't forget to check out our sister shows, Parent Savers for parents with newborns, infants, and toddlers, Twin Talks for parents of multiples, and our show, The Boob Group, for moms who breastfeed their babies. This is Preggy Pals, your pregnancy your way.
This has been a New Mommy Media production. The information and material contained in this episode are presented for educational purposes only. Statements and opinions expressed in this episode are not necessarily those of New Mommy Media and should not be considered facts. While such information and materials are believed to be accurate, it is not intended to replace or substitute for professional medical advice or care, and should not be used for diagnosing or treating healthcare problem or disease or prescribing any medication. If you have questions or concerns regarding your physical or mental health or the health of your baby, please seek assistance from a qualified healthcare provider.
New Mommy Media is expanding our lineup of shows for new and expecting parents. If you have an idea for a new series, or if you're a business or organization interested in joining our network of shows through a co-branded podcast, visit newmommymedia.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, mamas. Don't forget to check out Mighty Moms. It's our online community built for new moms just like you. Not only can you connect with other moms, but you can also join us backstage for special mom-only online events. And you'll also be notified when we're recording so you can join us as a special guest. Visit our website, newmommymedia.com, and click on the Mighty Moms banner. It's free. That's newmommymedia.com. See you there.